You're listening to News Tribune on Tap, The Fine Print, where we bring you the stories behind the stories. I'm your host, Mia Sanson, here with the latest headlines, newsroom reporter interviews, and a closer look at the stories shaping our community. In today's episode, we will be covering stories from Saturday, November 29th through Tuesday, December 2nd. First, we have a story where due to cold temperatures Monday, volunteers at Jefferson City Room at the Inn were ready for a full house on opening night. I'm here with our health and social service reporter to tell us more.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Palagathile. Let's dive into my story about Jefferson City Room at the Inn's first night. The Jefferson City Room at the Inn, which is a low-barrier overnight warming shelter located at First Baptist Church here in Jefferson City, opened last night ready for a full shelter with cold temperatures and snow. Low barrier means that there aren't any background checks done and folks don't need to show their ID to stay. They just need to provide their name. This means that anyone above the age of 18 in need of a place to sleep when it gets really, really cold out will have a place to stay and get some free meals thanks to volunteers.
So I know it didn't say in your story, but do we know how many folks stayed there overnight?
Yeah. On an opening night, actually, Room at the Inn had 15 guests. Six of those had stayed at the shelter before, and 9 of them were new to the inn, according to Room at the Inn Chair Sarah Hamilton. 13 were men and 2 were women, and this was just a little below their capacity as they have room for 20 guests. In the past, the Jefferson City Room at the Inn had several nights where they were at capacity and had to turn people away. But in this case, they try to find other places for them to stay, like the Salvation Army. For example, Hamilton told me for an earlier story, the Salvation Army converts their dining room into a temporary shelter for overnight guests. And last night, they had 4 guests, 3 men and 1 woman. The Jefferson City Room at the Inn opened fully staffed with volunteers for this whole week, including overnight shifts during their opening week. When they opened last night, they were also fully stocked on cleaning supplies, toilet paper, and everything else you would need to basically run the overnight shelter. So people in the community really stepped up and brought items from their Amazon wish list. But the shelter remains open now through mid-March, weather and volunteer dependent, so there still are plenty of volunteer opportunities. People can go to their Facebook page to reserve a volunteer slot. But people who are on the fence about volunteering and maybe never volunteered before are encouraged to shadow current volunteers so they can go around and see what it's like. But if they're interested, if someone's interested in doing that, they are asked to email the shelter at jeffcityratti@gmail.com. And that's Jeff City and then RATI.
Missouri lawmakers pre-filed a record-breaking number of bills for the 2026 legislative session. Here to talk about what local lawmakers are looking at are state government reporters Damon Grossfiener and Lizbeth Garcia.
Good morning, everybody. Damon Grossfiener here. So, local lawmakers in the House of Representatives pre-filed 18 bills on Monday. All of the bills that were pre-filed on Monday from local House representatives are holdovers from last year. They're bills that the lawmakers tried to get pushed through last year, but they didn't end up making it across the finish line. So this is the next step for those bills. Representative Willard Haley from Eldon pre-filed 9 bills. They included measures to increase punishment for the criminal offense of trafficking fentanyl, cleaning up outdated statutory language related to the Department of Higher Education and Workforce Development, and increasing the cost of living allowance for retired public school teachers. He also continued his push for construction work in progress, or QIP, for nuclear energy in the state of Missouri. Representative Dave Griffith, on the other hand, pre-filed 3 bills. They included increased penalties for driving while intoxicated, new provisions related to towing commercial vehicles, and a proposal for a constitutional amendment to authorize a homestead tax exemption for 100% disabled veterans. Representative Rudy Veit pre-filed legislation related to the courts and the judicial system. He also pre-filed a bill to ease the burden people with disabilities face when obtaining or renewing their driver's license. Representative Jim Schulte did not pre-file any bills Monday. He said that he was working to help his legislative assistant who suffered a family tragedy before Thanksgiving. Because of that, he was not planning on pre-filing legislation, but did know that he had several bills in process that he planned to file when he is able.
Senators, on the other hand, filed just over 25 bills. Senator Mike Brinsgetter from Jefferson City actually is proposing a bill regarding an issue that was brought to him by a constituent. The bill essentially advocates for the detection of a abnormality in a that can potentially cause uterine cancer. The constituent that had reached out to Senator Brinsgetter had lost his wife to uterine cancer and believed that if she had been screened for this type of abnormality in the protein, then potentially her life could have been saved. A number of Brinsgetter's bills relate to a number of healthcare provisions as well. Meanwhile, Senator Travis Fitzwater from Holt Summit is focusing a lot on energy and utilities. One of his 21 pieces of legislation that he filed creates and modifies electric utility provisions, which would potentially cede approval of construction permits for solar energy projects or solar farms to individual county commissions and allow solar energy property to be exempt from property taxes at the discretion of individual county assessors as well. Fitzwater also pre-filed legislation creating nuclear energy-related provisions, which has been a large topic among the House Utilities Committee as well. Nuclear energy has just been a popular topic this year among legislators and among the states. In a Facebook post Monday, Fitzwater described the bill as necessary for our future grid and consumption demands, which lines up with a lot of what the energy demands for the state is.
With so many bills being filed on day one, how will this volume affect the legislative process once the session begins?
The House Clerk's Office said that they were expecting a large amount of legislation to be pre-filed. They got a lot of requests in, and so they were expecting, and they continue to expect, that until the session begins on January 7th, they're going to have probably a continuing amount of record-breaking numbers of pre-filed bills. That may not necessarily translate into a record-breaking number of legislation passed by either the House or the Senate. A part of that reason is that it is an election year, and during election years, things can get heated on the floor, and there may not be movement on some of the priorities that are not more bipartisan in nature.
Okay, interesting. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Last, we have some information for those considering serving their community through a role on their local school board. I have our education reporter here to share more.
Hi, Mia. This is Anna Campbell, and I'm the education reporter with the News Tribune. And that's exactly right. We're headed into election filing season for some of our local offices, and that includes our school boards. So filing is going to open for that on Tuesday, December 9th. And generally, those hours will be Monday to Friday, kind of during school hours. It varies a little bit district to district, but you can always go to the main district office to sign up. And if there are some people out there that are thinking they may want to run for school board, some things you may need to know. You're going to need to be a U.S. citizen. You need to live in and pay taxes in your district. And you need to have lived in Missouri for at least a year. Need to be at least 24 years old, and you can't have any felonies or sex offenses, and you need to be up to date on taxes. So it's not just legal requirements as well, though. You'll want to think about some of the qualities that you kind of bring to the table. Back in 2023, I spoke to a couple of area school board members, and I asked them what advice they had for people that were thinking about serving, and the top piece of advice they had was do your homework. So learn about your district, ask tough questions, be prepared for meetings, and then they also encourage people to just take it seriously and be engaged. So if you were to get elected, you'd serve 3 years, and that would be an unpaid term, and then when your term expires, you can run again. There's no limit on how many times you can serve. And then that election is going to be April 7th of next year.
Anna, do we know who is currently running for school board right now?
We know some. A lot of them are still deciding, and the filing date, as I mentioned, is not here yet, so they still have a little time to decide. But for our Cole County public schools, in Jeff City, we know that Brad Bates has said he's not going to run again. He said from the start that he was going to do 2 terms and that would be it for him. He wants to see some fresh faces and fresh ideas. We did also just learn today that Michelle Rademeyer, who's an accountant from Old Summit, and she's a former budget officer for the state, she is planning to run for a Jeff City School Board. And then Richie Jenkins, he has served for several years in Russellville. He said he's not going to run again. In Blair Oaks, Doug Moeller is going to run again. He's already served 9 years, so he's looking for another term there. And then over in Eugene, Spencer Hoskins has said he will run again. He's thinking maybe just one more term, though.
Are there any major district issues like budget or curriculum facilities that could be significantly shaped by the makeup of this next board?
Yeah, I think at the state level, all of our local districts are going to be thinking about changes that could come, and I guess at the county level as well, changes that could come in taxes and how personal property tax is calculated and dealing with a senior tax freeze. I think they're going to see a lot of changes in the revenue they have, and they're going to have to make some tough decisions about how they spend their money and what they need to prioritize.
This concludes today's episode. You've been listening to News Tribune on Tap, The Fine Print, a production from the News Tribune. I'm your host, Mia Sanson. For more stories and in-depth reporting, visit newstribune.com, our social media channels, or pick up the latest edition. Thank you for joining us, and until next time.